Hello there, welcome to the No Script Show. This episode is going to be all about Google Ads and is for those new to pay-per-click advertising, particularly small businesses, for example, vets, accountants, therapists, electricians, etc. From our experience helping these businesses build websites, many don't have the time to learn the differences between traditional marketing, so for example, advertising in newspapers, local radio, buying sports kits for local teams, etc., and digital marketing, to which Google Ads belongs. As this is key to spending marketing budgets well, we're going to go over what to consider before launching a Google Ads campaign. You can find the transcript, the show notes, and the presentation slides. They're going to be at the website noscript.show/26, so the numbers 26. And if you're watching on YouTube, the link will be in the first comment just below the subscribe and like buttons, which you incidentally should press. Should you wish to get more content from us in the future. As always, I'm joined by David Walmsley. Hi there, David.
Hey. Thanks, Nathan. Oh, well, I'm hoping this episode might be of use to future clients of mine. That's really my intention behind it. Even though I kind of do a bit of marketing strategy when I'm building client sites, because obviously I have to think about the users when I'm doing that, rarely does this stick with them at all. So it's fairly common a few years later when things have gone quiet on the website for me to get a request to add a Google tracking script, or when with a WordPress site to give access to a Google Ad Campaign Manager. And recently, and this is what prompted me to want to talk about this, a client forwarded a appointment with a Google technician support team member.
Right.
And there was no information, so there was an expectation that I would attend this meeting. But I wasn't sure, so I thought it was a phishing email or something, because Google are huge. They've got $300 billion in ad revenue, so they've never been interested in hand-holding small businesses before. But it seems, looking this up, that it's just one of several defensive actions that Google's been taking since a recent decline in their search dominance.
Okay.
And experienced advertisers are starting to report that they're getting poorer ad performance. So I think they're acting accordingly and looking to beginners who previously wouldn't have spent anything because they couldn't get beyond that sort of setting up of the campaign and the Google Tag Manager, the way of being able to analyze the results. So that's really what's brought this on for me. Maybe this is a good thing that Google are doing, but there's a bit of me, the cynic in me, that's thinking, well, did this complexity mean that it was stopping people from who shouldn't have been doing it, doing this? Should you be flying a plane, really, if you don't know how to take off? So I think
good point.
Probably give some advice on this. So we'll move on to our slides properly and talk a little bit about what Google and Google Ads are.
Yeah, okay. So I guess that's a good place to begin. So just cribbing from the slides here a little bit, Google search is really pretty dominant. I mean, I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but it has become like a universal verb to say to Google things. We definitely used to say search, but now we say Google. And then, of course, it's got a massive suite of products behind it. I mean, there's four listed here, but there's way more than this. Gmail, Maps, Calendar, Docs, and pretty much everything in my life is embedded in those. We, for example, share Docs in Google Docs for this show, and I use Google Maps, and I'm a Gmail user. It's pretty much everything. If Google went down, I'm in big trouble. It is the world's largest advertising platform, which is kind of strange to know. Through Google search, for example, YouTube as well, and it's got its ad display network. And Google's economic impact report puts advertisers' average return at 800%. That seems like an eye-watering figure, but okay, there it is, 800%. Wow.
Yeah, I know. But I did a bit of research onto this one, and I should probably mention as well that for those who don't know, Google Display Network, it's really this collection of over 2 million external sites and apps, often blogs and games, that make money from displaying ads. So they put their ads on their site. If somebody clicks on it, they make money from Google. There are other creditable reports that suggest that the number, the return on investment, might be more like 200 to 400. And then I think typically as an industry, it seems that most people will say that the average return on an ad spend is for every for every $1 spent, you'll get $2 in revenue. But it's still pretty good, isn't it? And you can see why.
Yeah, I mean, so long as it's more than $1 yeah. for $1, it's probably a good business decision to start using things like that. I'm staggered that it is as high as that, in all honesty. I kind of thought the days of that were all over. But anyway, so yeah. There's more in the About section. So, for example, this whole ad thing is a subsidiary of the profit-focused Alphabet. So Alphabet is the parent company mm-hmm. of Google. That I don't know quite why they did that move a few years ago, but they did. And Alphabet itself, gosh, really? $3 trillion is apparently the worth of Alphabet, which is pretty amazing. Google supplies free tools because the data supports its primary business. Yeah, they're not giving it to you for no yeah. reason at all. And Google Ads won't give suckers an even break. What did you mean by that exactly?
Well, they're a business and their ads are set up. If you go in with no skill or no knowledge and you go with their defaults, they're not going to necessarily work in your interest, but work yeah. in their business interests. And I think we'll see that as we go through. I mean, really, this slide is just because I think many of us will see Google through rose-tinted spectacles. But they are one of the magnificent seven out there. Apple, Microsoft, gosh, Amazon.
No script show.
Satan. I don't know who the others are. But I think particularly, I talk to clients all the time because people who came in on that wave of the digital revolution saw Google as this wonderful people who just did things right, who had a really good culture.
Yeah.
People wanted to work for them. But I think we have to realize that their ethics has kind of been watered down over the years. They are big corporate business. Their don't be evil motto is long gone. And more recently, their longstanding commitment to avoid AI in weapons development, that's gone. Google's faced multiple privacy violations. And probably in terms of that, just taking the rose-tinted spectacles off. One thing that if you're going into this that you need to be aware of, because they won't make you aware of, because of GDPR, if you're sending any data, which you will do through Google Tag Manager, you actually need the consent to be able to do that before someone's data is taken over there.
Right.
And of course, like most businesses who are set up to trade in data like Google, they're only really going to advertise where they meet GDPR. They're not likely to advertise to somebody who's setting up Google Tag Manager that you need to add this quite intrusive off-putting privacy pop-up to your website, which you will need to do if you get into Google Ads.
So, okay, yeah.
So I'll move on to another slide.
Okay, so I guess this is our final about slide. So here's some more information about Google and whatnot. So an average return on investment can't be expected as there's no normal distribution. The success is going to vary across industries and depending on skill. I'm just going to dwell on that point. I think that skill bit is the crucial bit and probably what we're doing here, in all honesty. Setting it up properly, like the defaults are probably not going to get you anywhere. And it's a bit like something like Google Analytics. The devil is in the detail, which is in a menu, buried in a menu, buried in a menu, buried in a menu. Yes. And also a familiarity with the interface and the ability to adapt as that interface changes over time, which it inevitably will. And the final point in our about section is Neil Patel claims that 8 out of 10 businesses lose money on Google Ads, which is about everything you need to know about that, really.
Yeah.
If the ROI is claimed to be 800%, but 8 out of 10 businesses seem to lose money on it, there's definitely something going wrong for those 80%. And yet the 20% seem to be making all the headway from the platform.
Yeah. I mean, Neil Patel, I mean, he's a prominent digital marketer. For those who don't know, Nathan and I know his work. He's authored books and he creates a lot of SEO content. And I think he still owns a keyword research tool as well. But it's not really backed up. But I will say in this, with my limited number of clients that I know of, maybe there's about 7 or 8 of them who I know of who have spent money on Google Ads. None of them who were particularly knowledgeable about this, actually, they all lost money on it, basically. So what Neil Patel's saying is probably likely a lot of people go in not really knowing what they need to know.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to drive the conversation forwards a little bit, and we've got a number of different slides to promote that conversation. So here we go. The first bit we're going to tackle is traditional, whatever that means, versus digital marketing. So we've got this strap line here of more traffic won't make a bad offer good. It kind of stands to reason, doesn't it? If you've got a bad thing, it doesn't matter how much you spend on the advertising, nobody is going to buy it. But you've got some more data to back this up.
Yeah, I'm just going to concentrate on this a bit, because I think this is the crucial thing about anyone getting into this. Because traditional advertising, I think most of us know, and moving to digital, it's hard to get your head around that. So traditional advertising through old media was fairly intrusive and blunt. You would have to advertise to everybody. So where you and I might have enjoyed the Bodyform TV ads or something, you and I as gents wouldn't have been interested in the sanitary towel product, because apparently, according to Jimmy Carr, it's not a proper gift.
Okay.
And I think similarly, when we go into the first wave of digital marketing, a lot of people carried that mentality around, just get more traffic. So people were gaming Google with keyword stuff in all the stuff that you knew about in the 2000s and 10. Google kind of got their act together and punished people who were gaming the algorithm because it wasn't in their business interest. And a lot of people kind of went out that time. And it was always there in the first place and offline, but there was a concentration in our way to think about conversion, the idea of using sales psychology to present an offer in a targeted way, which you can do. That's the beauty, I think, of Google Ads. Unlike any other sort of search engine work that you might do, it allows you to kind of really finely tune who you're going to have come to your site. And I mean, I'm going to go on a little bit on this, but I think we just instinctively know this in the real world. So if, for my example here, if I was setting up, I'm not going to do this, a shop, and this shop only has one product, it sells classic black dresses, we'd know instinctively that the value of that dress would depend on the person coming through, how they would value it. So if a young teenager came through, probably going to guess when they come through that they're not going to be interested in stuff that I might have worried about, the fabric, that it's durability, that it's easy washable. That's probably not going to be their primary concern. Whether it's cool, who's wearing it now might be their thing. Mm-hmm. If it's an older person, they might be like me. They change their weight all the time and they want to know that it can adjust to that. If it's a man coming into the shop or something, assuming that they're not like me and they like to go by the name Susan at the weekend. I'm joking there, by the way. It's Jenny, I prefer. If they come in, they're probably looking for a gift. So they want reassurances that this might be the gift for the right kind of person. And you might sell the fact that it's easy returnable, that sizes don't matter too much, it's quite forgiving, and that you gift wrap. So if you see what I mean, one product can be sold and the highlighting. And that, I think, is the key thing about where Google Ads come in, is because it allows you, with pay-per-click, you can target who's coming into your shop, so you can greet them with the best story, if you like, to be able to convert them. So I will move on.
It's okay. I've just got a couple of things to add to that, and that is that sort of hyper targeting. Whilst it's like the unicorn, it's what everybody wants. There's also a boatload of work in there, isn't there? Because each time that you identify this, let's go for avatar, that word, this persona, if you like, you've got to tweak the message for that eventuality and then tweak it for this other possible eventuality. And so in the same way that putting a shop up, you're going to have expenses in terms of rent, electricity, gas, staffing, and all of that. This isn't a quick fix. You're probably just going to have to divest some of those resources into other ways. You won't have the gas to pay for, you won't have the electricity to pay for, but you still have to pay for stuff to make this work, because time will be the thing and expertise will be the thing. So it's not like you just move everything and it's instantly rainbows. There'll still be an awful lot of work to do to figure out who these people are and figure out the language to correctly sell to them. And that brings us to the next slide, which is the irascible Bob Smith, who is a gardener.
So just going to use him as an example on this.
Yeah.
I mean, most websites, so the home pages, do things that you would never do in a shop. So if somebody entered your shop, you wouldn't say, "Welcome to my black dress emporium. We were established in blah, blah year. And we are passionate about," you would move straight into it. And that's the problem with home pages. So if we imagine we are Bob Smith and we're a landscape gardener in the UK, in the county of Lincolnshire, which we both hail from.
Yeah.
And let's imagine that he gets lots of work from his website, but it's general gardening work. He doesn't get the stuff that you would ideally like to be doing, the hard landscaping, making patios, walls, driveways and paths, that kind of thing. So he's told, he's got his website, he's doing his job, he's not giving him the work that he wants. He's told he can target people via Google Ads. So he sets up campaigns for them. But the problem is that he sends all of this traffic to his generic homepage where there's kind of very limited message match. And I'll let you read out these main
points. So I guess this is like the golden goose, isn't it, of the internet, the ability to target things. So for example, in the case of Bob Smith, he's going to be paying more per click because this page has a low quality score. So in other words, the people that are arriving at that page, the intuitions are not quite aligned to what it is that they're looking for. He's at the top of Google search, but attracting those with least patience to search his site, which is kind of curious, isn't it? That's a weird juxtaposition of information. The idea that people who are quickly searching around on Google might be the people who are the least likely to dwell and stick around. And then also there's distraction and no specific call to action as well. Yeah, you can just about see the picture under David there. It's very generic. There's nothing particularly leading you to the next step.
Yeah, and I think quality score is an important thing, but it's about relevancy. I mean, if you're going to cheat your way to the top by paying Google to surface on the top, the less relevant your page is. And that's going to be about keywords. So in a typical website like Bob's, he's probably going to have a section that goes into hard landscaping, but on his page, he's probably got no mention of patios, the thing that he's advertising.
Right,
so when somebody goes there, they land on a generic page with a generic call to action to get an estimate and no mention of the thing that sent them there in the first place. And given that those people are probably clicking on the first thing that they see, they're probably least likely to go searching. They expect it to be handed to them.
Yeah.
So,
I see. Yeah. That's a really interesting intuition. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the thing. I mean, quality score, I should just probably emphasize, is a little bit more than just having the words in there, because Google uses this as a way of predicting how likely your ads likely to be clicked on, the sort of relevance to what you're talking about and your site, and you know how closely your ad copy, which is quite important if you're setting up the schemes to get that right, match the user's search intent. So Bob, really, like most people, would have no time to work on a landing page that was specific for each of the people he was sending. He'd be too busy to do keyword research to know which is the sort of low-hanging fruit to pay the least. And he's probably unlikely to set up lots of variations of the copy of the ad to see which one performs best as a quality score on all of this. So you end up, and I'm sure this is the case with a lot of people, that they're willing to pay to bring more of the people that they want to see. But in that, they are ignoring the key thing that Google Ads does, is that it allow you to get a specific type of user. And it's the user and how you accommodate them that ultimately makes it possible for him to get the work that he wants.
The other thing for Bob, sorry, can we just, if we just stay with Bob for a minute, is given that Bob is a gardener, like he's just doing this whole gardening thing and the internet is probably not his thing. Maybe it is his thing, but probably not. And so that whole intuition of, okay, you need a page for this and it needs to be configured in this way to attract these kind of people, that's not Bob's thing. That's kind of your thing, my thing. You've got a background in psychology, which always bleeds into these conversations. You probably don't even notice it, but there's always some psychological driver in what you say. And I think that's really interesting. What are the intuitions? What are the incentives that people arrive at that page on is going to be really important. The other thing is that Bob is fairly, I'm assuming a bit about Bob, but I'm imagining Bob is watching the pennies. And every single thing that he spends on a Google ad, it could feel like a complete black hole of money. Yeah. I've just spent £200 and I don't have any intuition as to what happened to it. Whereas the ad that I put in the local paper, I got a phone call and I know that gave me something back. And it's so much less obvious. It's easy to say 800% ROI on Google ads, but it's harder to know where that 800% is coming from, because the internet just doesn't give you that information. Well, it doesn't out of the box. Obviously, we'll maybe get into that in a future episode. Anyway, that's me finished about Bob. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I mean, what I've done is, and I'm going to have to talk on a bit now, I've contrasted it with Bob's wife, who's Mary, who runs a marketing business. So she knows this stuff. And she has a web designer. She has somebody who does the Google Ads managing for but they coordinate the two sides of this through her strategy. So one of her clients wants her to promote a summer music festival a year ahead of the event. So what she would do is somebody with a kind of marketing mindset or digital marketing mindset, she'd set up a landing page for that early on to try and get listed on search as soon as possible. And then via social media and blog posts in particular, she'll create links into it to hope that it'll get promoted in organic search and not have to pay for anything.
Right.
So she's likely to do keyword research for the blog. So, you know, she'll be doing that sort of psychology, thinking about who are the people who might be interested in this, the potential customers. There might be holiday makers coming to Lincolnshire in the summer. There'll be regular music lovers, concert goers. There'll be fans of the performers that might be on that show. And she can write blog posts on all of these and create this kind of hub and try and get free traffic. And that's their ideal. She would start with that a year ahead, hope to sell all the tickets. But she would also know, and this is where Google Ads could be useful, is that on something time sensitive, where she doesn't have the time for this to rank higher in organic search.
Right.
Use Google Ads to boost what does less well organically. And she's already done the keyword research for a blog post anyway. So that's going to give her, when she's doing that, she's going to know what the cost per click is while she's doing that. So she's already set up, if you like, to be ready for Google Ads. So she is, well, conversion focused.
Yeah. Okay. So the skinny on conversion, being conversion focused, is a tweet landing page for each ad type. So we kind of alluded to that with Bob. Rather than just generically dropping in on the homepage, there's a place where each of the ads will end up, and hopefully it's finely tuned to what the ad message was saying. Builds in urgency with a bit of FOMO, so the fear of missing out. I guess that's, in the case of a concert, that's nice and easy to achieve, isn't it? Because there's a deadline in terms of the calendar, but there's also a finite amount of tickets. Maybe more difficult for Bob, special offers, things like that, who knows? But also includes a lower risk of, sorry, includes a lower risk conversion option as well.
Yeah, sorry, I put this in the notes there. But yeah, so with her, she could do the FOMO ad can stand out because she can say this is the last chance to get your 20% off this concert to try and increase the urgency. And then, of course, what she's going to do with her landing page is it's built and it's going to have lots of different imagery. She can change that imagery. So if she's attracting families, she'll have more family stuff with kids in it on her images of the stuff. And she can change all the headlines to match what's going in. So some of those ads will be set up to see if the money is going to help and convert. But also, I think what she'll know, and this is something that Neil Patel and people like that would allude to as a digital marketer, is that most of them will know, we know, that over 70% of the people who will visit a website will leave, they'll get distracted, and they will never return again. They'll just completely forget about it, and their life takes over. And so what you would generally do, if there's a possibility, you would add in a lower risk conversion option to go in that. So for Mary, there are a lot of options that she could do that would build into what she'd do. So if she's trying to attract the tourists or something coming into Lincoln, she might add into the bottom of that, for the in exchange for an email, that there's a guide that they can download here to find out about other events for music lovers, similar music events for bargain hunters, where there are discounted events in the area. All that kind of stuff is a way of just getting an email off somebody so you could follow them up later at some point and just say, here it is, and encourage them to go again. So your cost for your click, you've got another chance to reuse that. So
right. Yeah.
And I think that's, obviously, there's so much more we can go into about the sales psychology and the conversion side. But I mean, anybody who's new to this, hopefully that sort of gives you a flavor for the different type of mindset that Mary might have compared to Bob when looking at this.
Yeah. So it kind of feels like everything that we've done so far is a bit of the why. And now it feels like we're moving into the how, the practicalities of doing things. So here are some examples of making mistakes while setting up the ads. This is basically where I would always fall down. There was always things that I think that I didn't do correctly. I didn't understand the tool and what have you. So just a few, three to begin with. Not using negative words, wrong location targeting, and also no conversion tracking. So you're not following that through and figuring out when people did a certain action. So over to you, David.
So, I mean, negative keywords. I mean, I looked this up myself. There are people giving various estimates about how much that might waste in your budget. I mean, when from 30 to 80% of your budget.
Wow.
So it's that example of Well, even, we can't get into all the details, but you get an option of basically a broad match for your search terms. So you can bring in people that are words that are very similar to what you've put in your ads or what the keywords you're working for, or you can have an exact match. But even with an exact match, and this is where you need to keep up with Google, because it changes the rules on you. So there's a lot of work in that. But even with an exact match, you need negative keywords. So Bob, obviously, he wants to maybe promote his patios that he's doing. But of course, he wants to get rid of the people who are searching for DIY patio. And as is at the top, he doesn't want to get people who are just going to click on it because they think that's what they search for, DIY. And he came up. So they've clicked on him. So you want to get all these negative keywords, words that people could type that are similar to what you're doing. If you were a carpenter, you might want to remove the word Cameron because you don't want people searching for music by the Carpenters or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then wrong location targeting. There's a little, this is what was mentioning before about Google kind of set it up for their interests, not necessarily yours. They set it up so it says presence and interest in an area. Where most people will want to change that to just presence. They are actually coming from the area itself. Now, in Bob's case, that would be the case because I might need a landscape gardener actually for this house that we've got in India. But I've got an interest in Lincolnshire. So if he left it under default, I would see his ads and think he's for me. Yeah. So where Mary might want to offer a particular campaign where she wants the holidaymakers from out the area, she might want to leave it on the default for that particular campaign. So you can really make a mistake by advertising to the wrong people. I think this gets much more complex these days, particularly with the sort of new digital acts and everything, and people moving to VPNs. You're not quite sure where anybody really is these days. But anyway, that's just one of the challenges.
Yes, it is, yes.
Yeah. And the other thing to just let, that's the targeted, the conversion tracking. Obviously, this is the thing that Google are helping people with by now setting that up. But I think it has to be noted that when you've got somebody like Bob, he's going in and it's very simple, I think, for Google to give in a little bit of time to say, okay, we can track who's coming through your contact form or maybe your clickable telephone number. Whereas Mary, I don't know if Google would spend all the time that they would need to do to set up something with Mary, where she's got lots of different calls to actions and buttons going on for different pages, lots of different funnels that people can go through to take up the secondary option. So I'm not sure if Google would be helping the professional in that way.
Okay, that's interesting. Mm.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing
Shall I take this or do you want to go with it?
Just yeah, please. Through.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, okay, thank you. The next one, time and money. Probably the secondly word anyway, at least, is why we're doing this. Google Ads is not a case of set it and forget it. Oh, I wish it was a case of set it and forget it. Everything's going to change, isn't it? Your offers are going to change, your pricing is going to change, but also their UI is probably going to change. So you need to stay familiar with that. Most campaigns, this is fairly amazing. Most campaigns need 2 to 3 months of testing, and optimization before hitting a profitable ROI. That's the bit that Google definitely won't be alerting you to out of the gate, I wouldn't have thought. And you need to be responsive and have a budget. So able to change and able to spend and adjust your spending as things ramp up, time of year, whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, I used a bit of AI to try and pull together what other people were saying about the sort of time that's required for this. And they came out with a sort of minimum of an initial setup 4 to 8 hours.
You
have to be monitoring 1 to 2 hours and a monthly optimization of 2 to 4 hours. But I think in truth, because it's a changing platform, there's always something new to learn and to set up. And you need to have an analytical mind. I mean, to get the best value, you need to do a bit of keyword research anyway on this.
And it's not nothing though, that is it? That's quite a considerable amount of time. In a busy working week that's already ram-packed with things, especially Bob, the idea of 1 to 2 hours a week, where's that coming from? A monthly additional 2 to 4 hours to optimize things and tweak things. It's just, that's tough. That's a difficult justification when there's gardens to be landscaped.
Yeah. And I think they're saying, I mean, putting this into pounds, that you generally need to be thinking that you're going to be spending £400 per month for at least a couple of months without expecting anything to come back. And that, in my experience of people I know have done it, they've pulled out after a couple of months off.
That's brutal, isn't it?
Of investing to be able to get some return, because you need to test all these different variations. So a lot of people are just not into that kind of thing. So And also, unless you know what you're doing, you want to avoid. And now, I don't think it's the default at the moment, but there was a point where it's led you to put yourself on the display network, which means that you can end up on all of these blog posts, or you can end up on these games. And of course, these people are making money through people clicking on their ad. So they're going to put them quite near to some controls, so you accidentally click. So you can really burn through money. So you definitely, if you did do that, you need to set a max spend. Ask Google, or just take all the money that you've got. Then make sure it's quite a minefield, but you can set this. But you know, the problem is this balance. People don't allow enough time or loss to come with it, and then they might burn it up in the wrong way for that. So,
well, and, like the example that you gave of £400 over 2 months, so £800 in that case, if you're just starting out or you're struggling, that's a healthy amount of money to lose with, at the end of 2 months, no expectation that you won't be at £1,200 by the end of month three, at sort of £1,600 by the end of month four. In other words, it just seems like a chasm of money. And of course, the intuition there is to pull out, because I've lost quite a lot of money that I can't afford to lose the next month and the next month. But counterintuitively, if you give it some time, then the results hopefully will come. But that's a difficult psychological bridge to get across, I think.
Yeah, I think you need to go in knowing that you're going to lose some money. And the last person I know, the client who told me what happened, very good client, smart person as well, but he'd spent in 2 months £4,000 and he got one lead out of that. And pulled out. Now we need something else. So that was quite a big hit. It was more than what he spent on the stuff that we'd done together. So yeah, that was a lot of money. So yeah, I made the point actually on the slides that you read out that you need to be more responsive. So I think generally there's a view that if you are in an advertiser, people know that you're advertising your stuff, or even if they don't and you're on the top, so you're selecting out the least patient people, you need to be quicker with your responses than you might be with your normal website. So you probably want to adjust your campaigns so they're not displaying when you're not around. You want to be replying within an hour or two, generally. I think that's what people say if you're getting clicks through from those ads.
Yeah. Of course, at this point, you're kind of thinking to yourself, okay, this is all lots of money to be lost here, lots of difficulty. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to hire somebody to take all of this burden away from me, and they'll be brilliant because they've got lots of badges on their website saying how great they are at this kind of stuff. But David has some, I guess, red flags or some things to be mindful of here, and let's just read them out. One red flag is someone approaching you offering to get you more traffic. I think you're going to go into that in just a moment and explain maybe there's something different there. Don't place too much faith in badges. So I'm guessing this accreditation thing that they have on their website, maybe not. And also look for transparency and someone who can show you example, like real, actual examples of clients, which are basically, I guess, similar to the business that you are running. So three things there, which you're going to develop some more.
Yeah, I think so. I never really know with clients whether they've been approached by somebody or whether they've decided to employ. And I think with some of them, they have just been approached for this. And I think it comes with that sort of, we'll get you traffic and get you to the top of Google thing, which you hear a lot of the spammiest people saying. And that sounds good to somebody who doesn't really know, but it's quite, because that's what Google ads offer you. Give them money and that's what you get, more traffic and you get to the top. So that's an easy thing to do. If they're not talking about conversion or the quality of score, that's probably a really worrying sign, particularly the way that most will charge for their time. So there's a range of how campaign managers who are experienced do this. Some will go on a retainer and or an hourly amount. Some will even do it on performance, but generally only if it's a big ad spender. What most local businesses are likely to be offered, which is the most common thing, which is to charge by percentage of the spend. So if that is their promise, only to get you traffic and get you on the top of Google and not quality and conversions, then they're incentivized to burn through as much of your money as possible and as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's a really interesting intuition. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, that's fine. And I think the badges is the other thing about you've got Google partners and you've got Google certified agents, and they have to be certified once a year on this one. And it can be reassuring and it can be a sign of something good. But also, again, in this case, Google can be gamed because, I mean, you can pass this certification every year by just Googling your answers and putting them in. And mostly your search partners are people who are spending $10,000 over a 90-day period, and that's the primary driver. And unlike with this type of gaming Google, it's in Google's interest because they earn money from the people who are generating this money for them. It's not like the search where that's being gamed, where it ruins their reputation. So I think from that point of view, it can be a good sign. And at least it means that people have made that effort to do that. But I think you've also got to look beyond that, which is why probably you need somebody who can show you examples of similar help they've given, conversions that they've given for industries similar to yours. That would be the best sign.
Yeah. And I feel that, well, certainly my inbox, my email inbox, is definitely from time to time full up with people promising a lot with this kind of work. It seems to be almost the most spammy thing you can possibly imagine. I'm cold calling you with it, or cold emailing you, demonstrating my credibility. And it is, as you say, it really is often just about, I'm going to get you to the top of Google. And of course, that's great if you've got an infinite amount of money. But exactly as you said, really what you want is, I want to make it so that you're getting loads of conversions. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything to add here. So I think you should just crack on with your checklist. So, yep.
Yeah, it's the last thing that we're covering here. So just really the main things, so much we could talk about on this one. But I think the main question you need to ask yourself if you're moving to Google Ads is, firstly, have you optimized your Google business profile, even if you have one? Now, I'm always encouraging people to do this and set this up because it's free traffic for you. You have your business account on there. They've called it different things over the time, but you set it up, it's for free. And then if somebody's in your local area asking for your service, you can show up on the map. Now, you've got all your competitors there. But if you optimize this, get lots of reviews on it, lots of good reviews, send people to it, and people just don't do this. And you fill in all of the stuff that they want you to tell them, like your opening times and all of this, and put in all the images, you've got a really good chance of getting a lot of free traffic. And people move straight to Google Ads before even setting this up as local business. So I think that's a key one. There's also something which I didn't know about until I started researching this. Shame on me. I think it's only been around since 2020, mostly started in the US, but they have a thing called Google's local service ads. And this is a pay by lead thing. So basically you pay more than you might do for your clicks to appear at the top with a call to action directly in that to either call you or to email you from that. And they will charge as that event happens. But you do have the option to say to Google, no, sorry, that was a spam thing. Don't charge me for that and they'll refund you.
Okay, so, that's interesting. I didn't know about that. So there
you go. I didn't as well. And if you're in the UK, I was checking their site and for a lot of the clients that I was checking out, that it wasn't available for their industry in their area, but it's okay to check out.
Okay.
Because it might be the way to go if you really do need to. It might be more expensive, but at least you know it. You skip out all of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of qualification going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, and you skip out of sticking all that nonsense on your scripts on your website as well. You just go directly to Google, sends you the traffic for your lead. It's a much more simpler thing. And then finally, and I think this is my plea as somebody who always feels like I should say something to clients, that have you optimized your on-site SEO? Now, generally when I'm building a site for people, it's not always what everybody wants, but it's what I try and build into it. I'll try and build in landing pages, if you like, for the different things that they do, and I'll try to do more. But I usually always feel that I want, even if they will go as far as making content for them for blog posts or something, if they give me a clue, but often I don't get to see this through. And in all my experience of working with the clients who have gone to Google Ads and then we've worked together to increase their blog posts and to focus on something, in every case, and it's just due to the nature of the fact that they've got so much low hanging fruit, what they pay for me really outstrips anything that Google Ads has been able
interesting
to offer so far. It's not that I don't think Google Ads are good. It's just that I think they're missing the low-hanging fruit with this first. So that's really been my experience. So I often think it's always one of these difficult things, I think, in the industry. I've talked about this before, is the fact that so many clients, when they come to a website, they come with the solution. They want this. They want a website. They don't come with a business problem. They want a slider. They want a bookings form. But they generally don't come with the problem and let the person provide the solution. So I think anybody who's looking into that, they might want to see if they know somebody who's working in some sort of marketing digitally and ask them, come with your problem to them.
Yeah.
And they might say Google Ads, because that might be the perfect thing for you, but they might say you've got other things you could do first.
There we go. I think.
Did I just rant then?
That made perfect sense. And I agree. It's kind of curious that the very last bullet point kind of upends the entire conversation that we had. But it, at the same time, that's the bit you've got to get right. There's no point in having an online presence without getting the free benefits of just having a good online presence. If the entire purpose of your online presence is to spend money on Google Ads, maybe you've missed the point, and there's lots of low-hanging SEO fruit, especially in the long game. If you're in this for the long haul, you can definitely tweak that over time and make it work for you. So there was the No Script Show episode number 26. You can find it at noscript.show/26. So the numerals 26. What's going to be the follow-up to this, David? What are we doing after this one?
I have absolutely no idea. We'll have to talk about this.
Well, we shall find out, is all that I'm going to say, when we're joined for episode number 27. Is there anything you want to add before we knock it on the head?
That was great. Well, I enjoyed doing it through these presentations. It's a little bit awkward, really, for doing this for the first time, but it was a slight change in...
Normally, we're not driven by slides, but this time you had created these slides, which kind of drove us forward. I liked it. I thought it was a really good way. And no doubt we'll get slightly better at the machinations of doing it in a slide-driven way. Okay, that's it. We'll call that a day, and I'll see you on the next one.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. Bye.
Bye.